Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney, and this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it. Welcome, everyone, to another Almost Nerdy episode.
Yes. So today we are doing Sorry to Bother You. I know we already said this.
Not sorry.
Okay. Interruptions over here. We said it in the intro, but for real, this movie, Sorry to Bother You, has like a crazy twist in the end.
Yeah.
So I really, 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 really don't want you to spoil, like, I don't want to spoil it for you because Shalom and I, when we watched this movie for the first time, luckily, like, it wasn't spoiled for us, but we were like, what?
Yeah,
like, mind blown. So, anyway, turn this off right now if you have not seen this movie and you don't want it spoiled for you because it's freaking amazing.
It is so amazing. It's so amazing. Just, I love those kind of twists where it just goes from, it was weird the whole time, but it was a different kind of weird, you know what I mean? Then it became a whole nother level kind of weird.
Yeah. And this is a really weird movie, but in a good way.
It really just took our breaths away. That was awesome. Yeah.
So I just want to remind everyone what we're doing. So we're focusing on Black stories.
Yeah.
And so we are focusing on movies and TV shows for the next couple of weeks that are Black leads. And we are going into who's directing it, who's writing it, who's behind the scenes, who's casting, all of that, like, as well as the story itself and how that's coming through in the story. So if you haven't listened to the intro, I definitely recommend listening to that because we kind of dive deeper into these things and why we find them so important and why we're doing these, like, deep dives into the movies that we chose.
Yes.
We also did Princess and the Frog last week.
We did.
That was a super fun episode.
We went wild. We went crazy.
Yeah, it was a little crazy. So, anyway, we're really passionate about Princess Tiana, okay?
This is important to us.
It's very important to us. So, definitely check that out as well. So, I'm going to summarize the movie, and then we will go from there.
Yeah.
So, basically, this film follows a young Black man who becomes a telemarketer.
Cassius.
So he becomes a telemarketer and he starts code switching and using his white voice or like a white accent.
And it's like, it's not even an accent. It's like a whole other voice.
Yeah.
It's another person acting the voice of the white voice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's a lot of like lip dubbing and stuff. Anyway, so he uses his white voice in order to move up the corporate ladder. And then when he makes it to the top, he realized that there's all these like corporate conspiracies going on.
Right.
And then he has to choose basically between making money and succeeding, like in quotes, succeeding, or joining his friends who are all activists to organize labor unions. And also to bust this conspiracy.
Right.
They kind of go hand in hand, though. It's like a weird, like, hand in hand thing.
Yeah. That's a crazy story. I can't wait to dive into it. But before we do that, we will take a quick break. All right. Welcome back.
So we are going to start from the top. So this movie was written and directed by Boots Riley. Who is a black man.
which speaks a lot. It really, you can tell that there's a certain delicate way. When I use the word delicate, I don't mean like soft, but I mean like a very, it's complicated, you know? Because there's this statement where he says, black people are not a monolith. We have all kinds of black people. And I like that this movie kind of presents that for us. You've got the artsy girl.
There's a character who says that?
No, not in the movie. But it's just a statement.
Oh, I got it.
It's a general statement that a lot of black people say, where, because people will say, like, all black people think like this or think like that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, no, we're not a monolith. We think differently.
Yeah.
And so I like that this movie has, you know, I'm forgetting her
name.
Tessa Thompson, her character, she's like an artsy personality doing these like things that people would say a white person would do, right? Like a white hippie type of person would do. And she's this one personality. And then even Cassius is kind of a certain type of personality as well. And I like that the movie presents us with all these different layers, and you have an older guy, you've got who has a certain way of approaching life as well, who takes success differently, and I like that they went down that path, and it really works when it's a black person telling that story, because they understand black society, not just the one that white people know. Right, the top layer of like, this is what all black people love rap music and so forth.
Yeah.
But you know, if you have a black writer, they know that there's so many other layers, and I like that they present them in this movie.
I think the one thing for me that felt very different about this is probably the first time I've seen code switching in a movie. Right. Where, like, it's so blatantly spoken about. Mm-hmm. So I think that is something that, honestly, only a minority could talk to. Like, only someone who's a minority who has to experience that code switching and, like, what it's like and that success that you can feel. And then that almost, like, you almost are seen as, like, Cash is almost a villain for part of this movie. He's kind of a traitor in some ways, and you feel for him. Like, he is trying, you feel for him. He's trying to make good decisions, but at the same time, I think he's faced with a lot of hard decisions. So I think the best way to go through this movie is to literally go through Cash's decisions. And there's a couple big ones. I've got about like four that I think are probably the biggest ones, and we'll kind of break them up.
Right.
So first, and I kind of touched on this already, Cash decides to use his white voice to get ahead at work.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that's such a, you know, such a nicely expressed concept.
Should we go back? Do you want to explain what code switching is for anyone who doesn't know?
Yes. So code switching is when a black person changes their accent. If they had an urban sound like accent, they make it more white sounding in order to be accepted by society. So they'll basically like talk very differently. Like they'll, you know, they might be with their friends, they might say, yo, what's up? How you doing, bro? Like they might talk like that. And then when they're talking to white people or in at work, they'll be like, hello, sir. How are you doing, sir? Everything. And they're very like white sounding.
Very white.
Yeah, very white sounding. And so I really like the way they presented it in this movie. They really, and they made it like having a white person do the code switch.
I think also the thing I like about it is it takes it to such an extreme that it makes it so obvious that you can't overlook it. Like I often like it when sometimes there's like a hard truth or like not necessarily a hard truth, but like something that's difficult to express necessarily.
Right.
Something that's very like subliminal. Like I think that code switching is one of those things that's like, it's very like, it's one of like those low level racism things where it's like, it's almost hard to describe. It's almost hard to pick out because it's like, well, how do I know if a person genuinely speaks like that or if they don't? Like, the exaggeration of it, I think, was beautiful. Like, I really, really enjoyed that. And it was fun. Like, it was funny. It was very funny. Yeah. Like,
yes. And I think it brings out the ridiculousness of it. Like, it really, like, allows, especially for a white person who watches it, I think it really makes it more clear to be like, okay, this is what it looks like. This is what it feels like, actually.
And I think it's a good conversation starter also.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, like, Cash was using his white voice. Like, is that what it's really like? You know, even when Cash makes it up to the corporate office, like, they say only white voice up here.
Right, exactly. Exactly, because, and this is also a reality in America, right? And I definitely wanted to land that to say this is something that you see a lot in America's workplace, in the workplaces. A lot of black people have to change the way they talk.
Mm-hmm.
When I say black, I mean a lot of black Americans mm-hmm. who have an accent. I'm black, but my accent is, some people say that I sound Jamaican. I don't know. But I don't know how I sound. I sound like how I sound. But but I don't have the black American urban accent. So I have not necessarily experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that's a bit foreign to me. But I do have friends who have urban accents,
mm-hmm.
right? Who, and I know what they sound like. And a lot of times when they're speaking to a white person or they're at work, they want to talk professional. It's like, mm-hmm, what does it mean to, mm-hmm. to talk like a professional? And a lot of times it's to talk like a white person to say, hello, sir. How are you doing, sir? Great, great. Let's go play some golf. Ha, ha, ha. You know, stocks. and I think that is something that is such a symptom of the racism, the deep rooted systemic racism that is mm-hmm. in America, and that is prevalent in the American workplace.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of black people are made to for them to succeed,
mm-hmm.
right? For them to succeed, they have to talk a certain way, they have to be a certain way, they mm-hmm. have to change the way that they are,
mm-hmm.
and that's something that this movie really presents very, very well. And it's funny as well. Like, so you gotta laugh at it because it looks dumb. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I like that they did it that way. It really explains it well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To go off of your professionalism a little bit, that made me think a lot about the NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
Mm.
In February this year, they had a whole campaign for black women hair. Specifically women, but also men. Because, like, braids are not considered professional.
Right.
Dreads are not considered professional.
Right.
Like, all of these, like, black hairstyles
right.
are not considered, in quotes, professional.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is ridiculous because as long as you go to work looking, like, clean, like, if you don't aren't mm-hmm. stinky, like, you should be fine, mm-hmm. right? Like,
right.
like, you should be able to wear your hair how you wear it. Like, right. you should be able to, if you want to wear a fro, wear a fro. Right. Like, but even things that make it very easy and like mm-hmm. hairstyles that black women enjoy, like braids and mm-hmm. things like that's considered too urban and mm-hmm. not professional. So mm-hmm. most women actually have to like straighten their hair,
mm-hmm.
which is a terrible, terrible, terrible for your hair. It's like chemicals and stuff that you put in it. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not good for it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been like a big push on like accepting all hair in mm-hmm. all, like it mm-hmm. sounds crazy to even talk about this.
It sounds crazy. It sounds crazy because
when
like,
you talk about it, you're like, well, yeah, you should be able to have your natural hair. Like your natural hair should be considered professional.
Mm-hmm. And I think you get so much into that. Like, I mean, back home, we were colonized, and so part of it is like you. A professional person has
in Zimbabwe for anyone who doesn't know.
In Zimbabwe. You comb your hair, and your hair needs to look like a mat. I have very scruffy hair and very curly hair, and I like to leave it like this. Even when I wash it, like I like to just leave it messy. But like, you know, for you to look professional, you have to get a clean cut, nice little lines on your mm-hmm. face and so forth. Otherwise, it's like, oh, that's not professional,
mm-hmm.
which I disagree with because I'm like, listen, like when, like. No one decides what's presentable, but you mm-hmm. know what I mean? You decide like what's the best representation of yourself. And society will create constructs, right? And when I say society, I mean the dominant culture
mm-hmm.
will decide what is the what's acceptable, what is the right way to do things, mm-hmm. what is the right way to speak, the mm-hmm. right way to dress. And so white people, like, I mean, Britain, the British Empire basically dominated the whole world, and so that whole concept of you need to look this way for you to go to work and to have your hair nicely cut and everything became like this. This is the classy way, the mm-hmm. professional way. You know, we'll have some tea, you know, with this. You know, and I think that's something that the British really sold, or rather not sold. They forced it on everyone,
mm-hmm.
and I think you see that a lot now, even. With, you know, I'm in America, like where It's like, hey, this is the way you dress, this is the way you talk, this is where you are. That's just the way it is. But the question is, who decided? Who decided this? Mm-hmm. And also, what does it mean for us to change that? How do you change it? How do you actually shift and say, we're going to remove this? And it only takes when we're like black people mm-hmm. deciding amongst themselves that this is it. And even that is not a one-way ticket. Like I said, black people are not a monolith, yeah. right? So you're going to have a debate even with that, you know? And so I just love that this movie presents this case so well in such a ridiculous way. And they bring a little bit of conflict, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit of conflict in some of the conversations. And I think that I just think that, like, they tackle a very complex subject and they do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're ready to move on to the next decision.
Yeah.
So part of the issue that they face in this, like, telemarketing room, right, is that they are only based on commission. So
right.
I always call him Glenn because he was Glenn on The Walking Dead.
Glenn.
So
please,
Glenn.
Don't tell me about Glenn. That.
No, we're not talking about The Walking Dead. You're going to get your love all worked up. So a couple of them have gotten together and they're basically like, hey, this corporation makes so much freaking money. Like, they make so much money.
Mm.
They need to pay us a base wage. Like, we should be able to support our families to, like, have healthcare, all these, like, basic needs. Like, they want to unionize. Like, they want to form a union. So they put down their phones at peak calling hour, and they all, like, stand up and protest.
Right.
So they all protest, including Cash. Right. And he actually gets promoted after that, and he takes
right
the promotion.
Right after that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know you had some thoughts on this.
I have some thoughts, and I have a little bit of a history lesson. Dre style. Dre from Blackish.
Does anyone wonder, like, Shalom is Dre.
Basically.
Like a less, like, Dre's almost like a parody of, like, a person, like, but Shalom is, like, almost, like, Shalom's almost Dre, like, in real life, though.
Yeah, that is true. I love the sweaters, you know, I wish I could just, like, get his whole sweater, like,
and his shoes. You love his closet.
Yes, sweater, shoes, maybe not the shoes, I mean, the shoes, I'm more of a Converse guy. Anyways, so, first of all, I think that, you know, I love the line that Glenn said. He said,
"It's not actually Glenn. We should."
Sorry, it's not Glenn, but the character's name. Give me 2 seconds. The character's name, Squeeze, right? So Squeeze, okay. Squeeze said. He says, "They ask us to give. They tell us to give them our day. They need to meet our needs." Something like that. It was something like that.
Clever. Like, it, if you're going to have our day.
So,
yeah.
Right. You need to, like, take care of our, like, basic needs.
Yeah.
Right? You can't take my day and me wonder how I'm going to eat, how I'm going to survive.
Yep.
Right. And I love that. I love that. And I think that this is common sense. It's just common sense. It's crazy that that's not the reality that's in the world today. Anyways, then the idea of, you know, the sellout, the Judas, the you know, the idea of dividing a class, right, is something that goes way, way, way back, right? And so back in the day, you had indentured servants who were both white and black, right? And then you had a rebellion.
This is in the U.S.
Yeah, so back in the U.S., and there was a rebellion, and then the whites, then they decided, okay, we're going to split these two. The whites will become the taskmasters, right? And eventually they created, like, the middle class, right? And then you had, you know, black people like, okay, you guys are now working for no pay, zero pay, right? And these guys watch over you and force you to do the work. And then in doing that, they divided the groups. Then, even with black people, they said, oh, you are light-skinned. We're like, the light-skinned and the dark-skinned, we're going to split them, right? We'll say the light-skinned, you guys, like, are a better class than these guys. And then somehow it created these divisions. So it went even as far as you know, some of the slaves worked in the houses, right, inside the house. And they were, like, cleaning and cooking and so forth. And then there were those who worked in the fields. The ones who worked in the house were seen as a higher class than those who worked in the fields. And then that created another division. So the whole concept of divide and conquer is of the classes, of the poor class, is something that is very, it's engraved in our history, right? It's engraved in our history, and it goes way back. And you see that in play here, where Dre, I don't even know why I say Dre. Now I'm caught up in
Dre. Because we're thinking about
Cash. So when Cash, you know, decides to protest, and he's getting into it. He's like, you know, he's getting into it, and then he's like, he's in the office and he's like cussing them out. It's like, yeah, F you, and they're like, whoa, and they're like, want to give you a promotion. And immediately he changes, he shifts, and this is something that back in the day, during slavery, they actually offered incentives to slaves who sold out their fellow slaves who wanted to rebel and wanted to like maybe kill the masters and run away, and so this is something that like that we see here. And Cassius falls for it, which I find his name interesting, because Cassius Clay, who is the boxer, who becomes Muhammad Ali, he calls Cassius, he says, Cassius is my slave name. So I wonder if that's what Boots is making a play on that. But, so basically, then, you know, Cassius becomes, you know, a sellout, and he starts to enjoy the good life, right? The good life. He starts to, you know, he pays off like his rent or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he moves up. He's got this nice apartment. And you see, I like the transition they had. They were like, they were making out, making out in bed, and the scene.
I think they were more than making out.
We saw the making out, so that's what I'll point out. But you can tell the scene is changing and everything, and eventually becomes this corner apartment with like this massive window by the bed and overlooking the street. And I thought that was a cool transition, but. You see that he is no longer supportive, and he even says, "I'm a bench player. I watch from the bench. Yeah. I will support you." And this is something that I think in my mind, right? I think this is pointing out to celebrities. At least that's my interpretation of this. That like, you know, the successful black man? What is the successful black man doing for everyone else? Mm-hmm. So when a black person finds success. Right. Sometimes, yes, there's hard work and there are all those factors, but there are so many black people who also work hard who don't get the same benefits. Right. And so this person is lucky. He's fortunate. Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone who's fortunate. Are they using that privilege that they have accomplished, this crazy privilege? Because this guy became like super loved and liked, right, in the company. But he never used it as a way to say, "Yo, you can't treat us like this."
Yeah.
You can't treat us like this.
It's like you forgot where you came from.
Yeah, I forgot, like completely forgot where he came from, and he gets confronted about this. And so coming back to the celebrities, I think that a lot of it is that these celebrities are so comfortable in their life. And I'm going to point out to one story, which is Jay-Z, who is one of my favorite rappers. Jay-Z just became a billionaire, you know, did really well for himself. That's the first musician or rapper or artist to become a billionaire, right? Him and Beyonce have done really well for themselves. And then they signed a contract with the NFL. Okay, and then with the NFL, a bit of a backstory with that, you've got Colin Kaepernick, who is kind of the center of a lot of conversation about around his kneeling during the national anthem as a protest to against police brutality, and then there was all that debate and everything, and Jay-Z is asked about that when he signs with the NFL, because the NFL blackballed Kaepernick to the point he can't play, right, or couldn't play. And Jay-Z's asked about it, and then Jay-Z says, "We are way past kneeling." mm-hmm. right? And I'm sure he had some sort of reason around that. I don't know. Like I'm sure he had some sort of, he will probably explain himself. I don't know. But the way it came out, it was like speaking against Colin Kaepernick, mm-hmm. Which I think was such
not a, just that, a, but in a, was, in a movement.
Yeah, in a movement, and I think that was definitely a sellout moment, like a cashless moment. And then recently, the NFL then turns around and then apologizes mm-hmm. and says, "Oh, we're sorry," but right now our focus is on Jay-Z, who is kind of like this personality that had did this, and he's not the only one. There are a number of Terrence Crews is another one. He's in this movie.
And he's in
too.
This movie.
He's so funny. He's in this movie, and he's kind of seen as that sort of like sellout type of personality who have succeeded and gone on to say dumb things or do dumb things that undermine a movement that's giving hope to so many people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting that this movie kind of touches on those things mm-hmm. where it's like with success, you know, this black person actually decides to kind of like walk away from the struggle. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I love that, like, only a black person, I think, would tell that story mm-hmm. the way that it was told. Like,
yeah.
That. And I really appreciated it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whew. All right. So that's basically the history
the Shalom lesson.
Of... You know, of that, like, you know, the sellout concept, and not concept, but like that's really a lot of black people went mm-hmm. down that path, mm-hmm. and I love this movie presents that well. So that's the end of lesson.
Thank you. So, I think my thing is, I think it's, you know, sometimes like when you're in the struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have mm-hmm. all these people around you, like, supporting you, being like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's mm-hmm. like, I think success is hard. Like, it's almost hard because it's like you want to keep succeeding. Who doesn't want to keep succeeding? Mm-hmm. And I feel like in some ways I really relate to Cash because mm-hmm. I'm like, I get it. Like, he's providing in a society, for like providing for his girlfriend in a society where it's hard to provide for yourself. Like,
yeah.
He's got all this stuff now. So it's like, personally, I feel like Jay-Z shouldn't have said we were past kneeling.
Yeah, that was
because
nonsense.
Clearly there's police brutality and there's lots yeah. of videos now to prove it. Yeah. I mean, there were videos back then too, but I think it's mm-hmm. just been, you know, mm-hmm. incident after incident after incident mm-hmm. lately. So I get that.
Yeah.
I think for me, when I think about Cassius, the thing that really hits me when he gets promoted is that he's cool with what he's selling
mm.
and he kind of convinces himself that he's just selling. He's not actually doing the like dirty work. Like, he knows he's selling basically slavery. Like, they're tricking people who are poor into this basically like slavery system. Like, they're mm-hmm. becoming basically what you said, like indentured servants. Like, mm-hmm. they're being tricked into this because they're poor,
right?
Because they're desperate,
right?
And they're taking advantage of that. And Cassius is good at what he's good at. He's good at sweet talking, you know. He's sitting there, and I think they always make it so funny. Like, he's like dropping into like people's living rooms. He like at one point he's like on the phone with someone while the guy's on the toilet, like yeah. talking,
and sells like a
and
lot.
And he sells like a whole like big weapon thing, you know, like he's selling weapons. But I think for me, it's like, I think sometimes, and I'm gonna bring this to a me level thing. I think, I feel like a lot of corporations are getting called out right now for using prison labor, and not having fair wages for people in prison, and I think for anyone who doesn't really get the okay, like prisoners getting paid, like why should they have fair wages? Like, why should I care about that? The issue is that our law, like we have jail. Jail's the punishment for your crime. You're not supposed to do physical labor. Like, that's not part of it. Like, we don't have work camps. We're not supposed to have that. So if you're in prison and have been deemed, like, that you can do something for society, you should get paid at least minimum wage. Because your punishment... Your punishment isn't basically being a slave. Like, that's why they call it slave labor. Because your punishment is jail. That's your punishment. So that's just... a whole other argument. But I think all these corporations are getting called out for that because they're profiting off of something that they shouldn't be profiting off of.
Right.
They're making extreme profits because they're not fairly paying workers. And that's an issue. So that's something that we've been looking into. We've actually been getting rid of a lot of products.
Right.
We're looking at you, Neutrogena. You were one of my favorites, but now you're not. We're looking for new things. Yeah,
which we're changing up, and it'll take a while.
We have different toothpaste now.
Changing up, yeah.
So
yeah,
we're working through Aveeno.
Aveeno,
get out of here.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to do. Like
I didn't really hit my point. So my point is though is that like is sometimes you need to be the one who's making those conscious purchases or making those conscious decisions. Like yes, Cassius isn't actually like forcing the slave labor essentially, but he's making the decision to sell it.
Yes
So like that's kind of how I feel. I'm like, I'm consciously like, I'm voting with my dollar, and it's like, we're not 100% perfect. Like, you know, Shalom and I live on a budget. Like, we can't always afford like the most expensive things. Like, you know, sometimes we just get what's on sale, but for the most part, like, we do look into what we're buying and try to make a very conscious decision about it, because it's the corporations will never make the moral thing, basically, because their thing is the bottom dollar.
Yes. And I really thought about that. This movie like pushes against corporations a lot. Like a lot, like the Coke thing. And I think you mentioned Kylie Jenner and that the one ad, the Pepsi ad.
Oh, we didn't get to that part yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay, let's hit the next decision and then you can talk about that.
Right, okay.
Okay, so then the third decision is when he actually fully, completely ditches his friends, crosses the picket line, and he ends up at this, like, crazy party for the guy who owns the – I forget the name of it. It's, like, Freeway or Way Free or something like that. It's the slave place. Yes,
Way Freeway or Freeway.
Something like that. And he ends up at this crazy party. So, anyway. So, the scene that Shalom is talking Worry Free. There we go. Worry Free. So, the scene Shalom is talking about is – that this one woman throws a soda can at Cassius as he's crossing the picket line, and the soda company actually ends up making a commercial about it, and it ends up being about like they kiss at the end of the commercial, like it's a parody of like the two of them, but like they kiss at the end of the commercial, and like basically a lot of times you see like corporations will take advantage of what's happening in the moment. So like you were talking about that. That was dumb ad,
like with Kylie Jenner, like there's a protest and there are all these cops, and Kylie Jenner gives the
and she's on the protest side and she like walks over.
Yeah, gives the riot police guy like a Pepsi, and then they become friends and poof, all the problems of the world are solved.
You know, and how many March and April, how many like I'm sorry videos did we see?
Sorry, the black and white ones. Because a lot of times, like you're right, like, you know, they follow the money. All day.
They follow the money.
There are very few companies that are doing the right thing. Ben and Jerry's is one of them.
They've always been that way. Like those the Ben and Jerry's, like Ben and Jerry are like literal hippies.
Yes. which is my point is that even though Ben and Jerry's has a phenomenal, they could literally like sell like crazy, like they could go nuts. They could have gone much crazier than they've gone right now. But they make their ice cream expensive because it helps to pay for a lot of things. Like a lot of the money goes to supporting causes that to do with like. And they talk about it like on their page. That's literally who they are. That's who they've always been.
They were sharing articles recently that they wrote like 3-4 years ago. Like they're resharing blog posts that they had written years ago, and people are like, they've always been like this. They've always been for social justice, and they've always talked about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's companies like that that give me hope. Like Ben and Jerry's, they give me hope. You know, that's why I buy one ice cream a week to support their causes. They're expensive because they are actually like using a lot of that money to help causes that deal with injustice, and I love them for that. And a lot of companies will probably follow suit one day, but a lot of them, they'll only do it because that's where the money is headed.
So I have a question for you. I think this is one of my things. Like, do we feel like corporations should like have an opinion on this, or do we not care if they have an opinion on like social justice? Or is it like, okay, let me start off. So how I feel about it, for example, is like, I would rather you just be quiet if you don't have an opinion. I don't feel like you have to have an opinion. What I want to know is that you have fair wages, that you have, like, there's not like racism or sexism happening within your company, within your corporate structure. Like that's, those things mean more to me, I feel like. And then like for other corporations, especially ones with factories, like I want to know, again, like especially that, like I want to know that you're not using prison labor. Like I want to know that like you're using fair wages, safe working conditions. Like that's what I care about more, I feel. Rather like I would rather you not do this performative like social justice stuff. Like there were a lot of messages that were thrown out in March by a lot of corporations, like we're doing this. Like some of the things that I did like was when corporations actually like put out their statistics and were like, okay, we only have like this many people of color and this many women at this level. You know, like, I think that was the only thing that I really liked from that, and them saying that they were going to do something about it.
So your question is, do I care as well? Like, do I care?
Yeah, like, what do you feel about that? Because, like, I feel like you're kind of like, like, you were, like, yes, I'm excited about Ben & Jerry's too, but I'm like, do I really care if all corporations are like Ben & Jerry's?
I do, mainly because that's the direction business has gone. So there was a time when business was just business. There was no... there was no endorsing, for example, right? So because an endorsement, you're saying, I endorse this personality, this person for who they are, and everything they stand for, I'm down with that. That's why an athlete will lose the endorsement if they do something dumb, right?
So or that say, the advertiser considers dumb.
Right, that the advertiser considers dumb. Or that the company's customers think is down. And so companies have gone down the whole morals path, and that's just where companies have they've gone down that. It's not a rabbit hole, but I think that's just it has given society leverage, to be honest with you. It has given society leverage because some of this with capitalism, I mean, capitalism is wild. It is wild. And dare I say, you know, I mean, capitalism is just one of the isms, right? Each ism, when it's like, when it goes crazy, it goes crazy, you know. And capitalism, slavery, communism, colonization, etc. And capitalism is so crazy that I like the fact that there is this form of the social justice aspect, or the where community can actually check capitalism and say, yo, you're not doing this right, change, otherwise we're not buying your product anymore, right? Or change, otherwise we're not. And it, I mean, that doesn't work when there's a monopoly. So like Facebook will say, I don't care, you know, I'll do whatever I want.
Yeah, because like, you that's know, the like platform. No one is
better than me. So
unless
we all go back to MySpace. I mean, that's why Facebook is afraid of TikTok, right? Facebook is nervous of TikTok because TikTok has taken a whole generation from both Instagram and Facebook, and they're just going to TikTok now. And so that, like, when there's a monopoly, there isn't that aspect of, you know, there was a time when it was all about price. It's like, who's got the better price? But now there's the aspect of, I mean, price is still a factor, but the fact that there's also like a moral factor of like, are you moral? Are you good? Are you like, not just, are you paying fair wages and stuff like that. But what's your view on like on ABC?
So then you're all okay. I guess like you're because like in the U.S., mm-hmm. corporations are basically considered people. So you're like, if you're gonna consider your corporation a person, then like your person needs to have opinions on this. You're a person in quotes.
I don't think it needs to have opinions, but I think it needs to, like, when you walk, right, you leave a footprint, mm-hmm. right? Your footprint touches a certain area, right? Mm-hmm. I think that companies, right, whatever they do, they're leaving a footprint in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. Whatever they're leaving a footprint in, right, they need to be responsible for that impact. Mm-hmm. They need to be responsible for it. Both with them being complicit and also with them actually enforcing certain things, right? Like, so there's the aspect where I'm sure we both agree on the aspect of, like, you know, be fair, like the things they control and they run. Yeah. Then there's the aspect of, because capitalism, right, has a lot to do with, there's a lot of dealings, there's a lot of connections, there's a lot of lobbying, right? There's mm-hmm. a lot of politics in capital, like a ton of politics. These companies, like Facebook, all these companies, they lobby. That's what they do. Mm. They're all about that because that's what keeps them going. So, you know, like...
Oh, I thought you were going to go down the route of how, like, the Redskins are now changing their name in the NFL after there's been a lot of protest about right. them changing right. their name because their new... Sponsor? No, right. they're new. Who is it?
I think it's Adidas.
They were like, no. I think it's something like Verizon or something. Whoever has their like yes. stadium, Comcast, something like that.
Comcast, I think.
They yes. were like, your name is racist. You need to change it.
You need to change the name. Yeah. You,
so in that yeah, way.
So in that one, I mean, is a little clear cut form, but still, for me, I think that. People were calling for them to change their name mm-hmm. before because it does, them changing their name has an impact on so many businesses. Like so many businesses will be like, oh my gosh, this huge company has changed their name. Should we shift to follow through this huge company? And what these big companies do actually has an influence on what everyone else does because mm-hmm. these companies also have political power.
Mm-hmm.
A company in America like Facebook, any of these big companies.
You're really stuck on Facebook today.
No, because they're Amazon probably is more powerful than Facebook, but Amazon and Facebook, they have political pull. They have mm-hmm. a certain way. So to us, we can't, it's very, they're not innocently sitting. They can't, or rather they chose not to innocently stand by and just like big companies, but to protect them, their interests, they decided to step into politics and influence where politics goes so mm-hmm. that they protect their company, their yeah. interests, and continue to grow. And so by them stepping into that, they have become political, then that's allowing themselves to be criticized by the public. So people actually can look, I can look at Amazon and say, if you change, because I know that you're lobbying, I know that you're political, mm-hmm. so I should be able to hold you accountable for what you believe and what you think, because I know that it does influence how things end up at the
top. Any company where you feel like they don't like lobby or anything like that, like those you don't really worry about.
Like for small businesses, small businesses are not lobbying. Like I mean, we live in a very cute town, like with nice stores. Like
none of those cute little stores with boutiques and stuff. Like they're not. You're thinking of like big corporations,
right? Basically. Like I'm talking about big corporations.
So do you feel like they should like put out a statement? What are you looking for then? I guess like what's a good. Like, what's a good example of, like, what you would look for? Like, okay, so say, like, we have another George Floyd type of incident. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, say we've got, like, a lot of protests going on again. Mm. Like, how would you want that corporation to respond?
I mean, to be honest with you, I would like these corporations to show that, okay, first of all, are you guys diverse in your company? Right? Like, the stuff that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing these long-term things that are actually... showing that you are being more diverse. Because if you have black people, if you have more women, if you have more Latinas, if you've got more of a cultural mix, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever position you take on issues that come that happen, mm-hmm. because these companies are powerful. What they say has the ability to shift governments, literally, right? If they are diverse, they can actually have a more positive influence. So for me, it's not really about the statements because, I mean, Adidas, actually, I listened to a podcast. There's a girl who worked at Adidas where they put out a statement like that, right? And yeah. she has been protesting for, I think now it's like 50 days, mm-hmm. 50-something days. And she's been protesting a lot of issues that are at Adidas. And saying, you guys are not treating people fairly. You're not, there's racism in the company.
And she can base that because they put that statement out. Is that what you're saying?
It's not the statement, but she works there and she knows the inner workings, right? Mm-hmm. So the statement is not really enough. It's all about...
Well, no, but then she can hold them to that standard.
She can hold them to that standard and actually say, hey, you guys are saying this, mm-hmm. but you're also doing like something else. Mm-hmm. So this is why, like, because these companies... will have, for example, they had a whole situation with a Confederate flag at mm-hmm. Adidas on their artist board, right? Where they're talking about inspiration. Mm. Like, they're like, you use this for inspiration. And there was a Confederate flag and it went through different hands, right? And so
And no one was like, take that down?
She caught it. So her and actually someone on a team, I think, caught uh-huh. it. And they took it to the top and it just became like it didn't go anywhere. It didn't. They put out like a bland statement, and that's it, right? Rather than saying, "Hey, we need systemic change. We need to actually see things change here." Mm-hmm. And so, a company like that, like Adidas, which is powerful, which we know that this company has the power to go to Congress, right, mm-hmm. tomorrow, and be like, "Yo, Congress, so and so, we paid for your whatever," and they can actually lobby for their own interests. Mm-hmm. A company like that, you want to make sure that company has diversity. You want to make sure that company has more people who speak, who actually believe in, like, who are actually, like, not just, like, they I call them Uncle Ruckuses, like, the sellouts, people who, like, because there are personalities who are just in for power, so they get a job, like... They get a job.
So would you say Cash was an Uncle Ruckus?
Right. Became Uncle... Cash wasn't really Uncle Ruckus because he didn't like end up like fully hating like black people. Mm-hmm. Uncle Ruckus was like Uncle Ruckus. You know, that's on different levels. I'll say maybe... Okay, I won't say names. But anyways, moving on. I was about to say some names. No, but
keep going.
But coming back to this girl, she's... I think she's black. And she caught it. And she loves working at Adidas. It was a big deal that she got this job, mm-hmm. and she decided to put her job at risk. So she's kind of like on a step thing right now, where she is on her way basically to losing her job eventually, right? And Adidas is not changing their stance because she's saying, first of all, you need to put out a statement of saying, hey, we apologize for being. For the racist things that we've done. We mm-hmm. want to apologize for the systems. Like, you know, and also say, here are three steps that we're going to take mm-hmm. to change.
Yeah.
And she gave them very specific steps that mm-hmm. would help them. And so she's been going there every afternoon protesting. Wow. And so that's something that I thought was super powerful. But coming back to my point, it's like a company like that, you know, needs... not just voices that like that are to them, they're like, oh, she's expendable.
I mean,
they can't really fire her. It looks really bad for them right now.
Yeah.
But they see it as, oh, that person is expendable, basically. Yeah. And but they need more people who are up at the very top, who get it, who understand social justice, who understand what needs to happen, and who can speak to, who actually speak to like a peer and say, hey, I'm an executive, you're an executive, and I'm telling you, you're off. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying we should not do that. And mm-hmm. and I think that's something that's what I'm saying, is like to say these companies need to be challenged. They need to be protested. Like, people need to challenge them and say, hey, you guys better change. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you better have an opinion. Otherwise, we want to know what your opinion is, because we know that you lobby. We know that you are a voice. Mm. And because you are a voice, we should be able to hold you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense.
I think it does.
Yeah.
So I think that was a good ending point for that topic. So I wanted to move on to one of probably the most disturbing scenes, even more so than the horse people for me, was definitely the party that Cassius goes to for, what's the name of it again? The company?
Worry Free.
So that disturbs me so much because there's this one scene where it's like, I can't even remember the guy's name who runs the company, but the worry-free owner, right, is sitting there and he's got like all these like women hanging on him. And there's like this whole group of just like white people just hanging out, and they have Cash come in and he has him like sit down in the middle of the room and he's like, I need you to tell me a story about like what it was like growing up in the hood. And like, he wants like a story of like, I don't know, some weird gangster stuff, like selling drugs, like all these things. Right. Mm. And Cassius has never done any of that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, take your white voice off. Like, you don't normally talk like this. And then like they make him rap and he's like, I don't rap. Like, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't rap.
Yeah.
And like what gets me there is like, I will never forget, like, when Shalom first moved here and people were, like, consistently asking Shalom if he raps. Mm. And Shalom's like, I sing. Like, I'm a singer. Mm-hmm. I don't rap.
Right.
Like, I don't think I sound good rapping. I don't rap. And that's fine. Like, I'm not, like, I think there are people who can read poetry. Like, I don't think I can read poetry. Like, I don't think, and that's, like, a white person thing, right? Like, doing, like, poetry, like, poetry reads. Like, I feel like that's a white person
thing. Actually, it's a pretty big thing in black culture now. I mean, I don't know if it's a now thing,
like,
but
a slam poetry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel like there's two different kinds.
Yes. Oh,
there's,
you mean like the yes. Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. We were on like two different wavelengths. Yeah. Like, so I feel like that like fetishizing of like black culture is like very much a thing. And even when like even in the like when the guy who owns Worry Free is like trying to convince Cassius to like become one of those horse things and like be, he calls him I want you to be the Martin Luther King of like of like the horse people,
right?
Like, he's like, you'd still have a big penis. And I'm like, that even that, like, that's sexualizing, like, that's like, and that's something that you hear a lot of, especially like the past couple months. I've seen so many posts that are like don't call people of color exotic. Like, that's really messed up. Like, even calling like don't call them chocolate. Like, it's like, we just need to like not do that. So I think for me, like, that was probably one of the most disturbing scenes for me, was just that you could just see the bias. Like, we want to hear your stories because we have a stereotype in our head of what you should be, and then we want you to confirm that stereotype.
Yeah, I love the imagery of that whole, you know, scene where you have a sex party. So basically everyone is having sex everywhere. Wild. And which is something that, like, you know, how it's one of those conspiracy theories where it's like, yeah, these celebrities, they have sex parties everywhere, right? So that's the first thing. And then you have like black, not just black. I don't even know if they're all black people who are getting turned into horses.
It looked, I mean, all of them looked darker.
Or some sort of oppression, right? So you have, you know, people being turned into horses. And I think there is this concept of the conspiracy theory concept where oppression, right, oppression, systemic racism has been turned into a conspiracy, right? And they've been put into that same space where you have,
you
know, and where people were just like, ha, that's just a conspiracy. Like, what? Like, that cop didn't just shoot that person. That's a conspiracy. There's an explanation. There's an explanation. It took a man kneeling on someone's neck for 8 minutes for people to finally be like, holy crap, there's something wrong with this system. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really picked up on, you know, in this scene. And also, yeah, you're right. Like, it's kind of like, people expect you to be a certain way. Like, and I think for me, like, it took me a while to get used to racism in America. Mm. You know what I mean? So for me, there are moments that were racist that I did not know. Like, I really did not know. I was just like, I don't know. I, like, some a lot of things felt weird, because I have that sort of personality. I usually will pick up on something weird and I can't explain it.
Like the time that person got you a watermelon randomly?
Right. Someone got me a watermelon randomly. I was like, why did I get a watermelon?
We weren't really complaining because the two of us love watermelon, but it was still racist.
Yeah. I was like, why watermelon? Why? I like watermelon.
We'll take
why
crab this, legs next
why,
time.
Why this is right? Why this fruit specifically? And that's something that I did not pick up on the races. And there are many, many other situations that felt so wrong to me that eventually I then picked up on, okay, that's actually racism.
Mm-hmm.
That was a racist thing. And because I wasn't used to systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say it, when you go like, hey, like what that person said to me, you know, at my work, my former workplace, I'll be like, what that person said to me was racist. And people are like, what? No, it wasn't racist. And then like later on, that person will say something worse later. And you're like, what? No. Like, and it's kind of like it's treated like a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's treated like a conspiracy. And so eventually, like, I knew how to point it out better
mm-hmm.
over time as I learned about systemic racism. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, you know, fetishizing. Right, that word. Like, yeah, it's very disturbing to think, mm-hmm. like, where it's like, yeah, like, where are you from? Do you do this? Do you like, you know, do you like have a lion as a pet? I goof around people. I actually intentionally lean into it. And I basically talk so about bad. My pet elephant.
His mom never had a pet elephant. Don't listen. If he tells you that, don't listen to him.
Because people are just like that. So I make fun of them.
Well, like, that's also by telling them
all sorts of
you have like stories. A weird level of like, you have a weird level of like American ignorance of like Africa and African nations and like what African nations right. have.
Right.
So like you also have that weird like immigrant experience yeah. as well as being like yeah. a very dark black man. Like it's like mm-hmm. you very there's like lots of levels for right. you. I feel like you have multiple levels.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So. And that's something that that's my way of dealing with it. I mean, Trevor Noah has his way, like where he was like someone was like, you're from Africa? How did you get here? And I was like, oh, a bunch of baboons carried the plane across the ocean. Yeah. And because, you know, sometimes if you don't make fun of it, you're just going to be angry. You're going to be just pissed off half the time. And so for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make fun of you for being ridiculous.
so silly. So I think let's move on to the good part.
Right.
So Cassius does redeem himself.
Right.
Yay! After he sees the horses, he sees the horse people, he sees what's happening. That is his like awakening moment where he's like, wait a second, like I need to fight this, like I need to do it. So yeah, let's talk about that, like his comeback.
The comeback. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool like that he went on that getting smacked, the way you get beat up.
Oh my gosh.
That show, that was crazy. That was crazy. And then it also kind of talks about society. It's kind of like a commentary on society nowadays where people, you know, I used to be like that, I guess, like when you see someone getting slapped in a train or something, you're like, whoa, you know, Captain Marvel does a thing as well, like where they have the fight scene between Captain Marvel and the Talos.
Yeah.
Talos on the train and Captain Marvel slaps Talos, who is looking like a grandmother.
Yeah.
And people are like, whoa. And then people are like, before they even help, they get their cameras out.
Yeah.
And that just like, I feel like this is also a version of that commentary, like where it's like, yeah, people are just obsessed with pain and with people getting beat up.
I've never been able to watch America's Funniest Home Videos because the majority of those are just people getting hurt.
Yeah.
And like, I don't really find that funny. Like
right.
it would just make me really uncomfortable. I could never watch that show.
Yeah.
I think for me, this like awakening part, there's when you are aware of a situation, you almost feel, I'm going to use the word mad, like mad as in like crazy, like because it's something so obvious and you can present a truth to people and then it can get turned so easily. And I really, really like this line that Squeeze says. He says something along the lines of something like, sometimes an issue is so big that it's easier to accept it as the norm instead of trying to make it better. And he was referring to, like, they showed concrete evidence that they're that, like, Worry Free is turning people into, like, horses. Like, they're experimenting on people. And what do they do? But the media turns around and they're like, scientific breakthrough. Like, instead of seeing it.
And the stocks shoot up.
Yeah. It's like, instead of seeing it as an issue, instead it becomes, like, a discovery. You know? And I think for me, it's like, that's kind of how I feel a lot of time about, like, social justice. Like, right now, I feel this way with the postal system. It's like, we're hearing all of these, like, it's literally, like, we're literally hearing that the election is being tampered with by mail, and there's nothing you can do about it. Like, that's, I feel like you feel like... You mean, like,
by the way the USPS is being treated?
Yeah, like, the way that they're being treated, it's like, and everybody knows that it's happening, but everybody's kind of like, I don't know what to do. And, like, there's no way for it, and I feel like that's kind of, like, what happened to Cassius here, where, like, people are like, oh... There are, like,
what do you do about this?
People getting turned into horses. Like, what do I do about it? And then it's like the rich people are like, okay, we're going to spin it so that it's not like a scary thing. It's just a norm. So it's like they really just wanted to make it a norm. And it's like it's the same with, like, police brutality. It's like people are like, okay, it's not just police officers, but it's the unions. It's the way that they're trained. It's the way that, like, we do things. And it's like, okay, so, like, can we work on that stuff? And everybody's like, no. And then it, like, it just becomes a problem that's so big that I think most people are genuinely good-hearted and, like, they do want things to be good and fair. But I think at the same time, it's like sometimes an issue is so like systemic that you feel crazy sometimes. You feel crazy talking about it. Like, I know people think I'm crazy when I talk about Rise of Skywalker and how I think it was legitimately racist. Like, I think very that movie racist. Was legitimate racist, and a lot of people...
The second two... The
people don't agree with us, Shalom.
Yeah, yeah.
People do not agree with us. Like, I think writing Rose out and writing...
yes, it was very racist.
Yeah, it was so racist.
And segregationist. It's very much like you have a black character who is a very interesting... Actually, he is the fresh take. He is the fresh take off the show.
Finn is the freshest take, you know, that they've ever had.
Right, they've ever had. And, ever. And I thought, and then the people started sort of fetishizing the whole concept of this bad guy who's chasing this girl, and then them falling in love. So people started going, like, the Raylo concept. And then people just, like...
Sorry, Raylos.
And then all of a sudden, like, J.J. Abrams, whom, like, just... ruined Star Wars. Like, he ruined
it. And Rose was an interesting concept as well.
Like, Rose was a very interesting concept as well, but they wrote them out. They completely wrote them out. They wrote Rose out, and they segregated Finn to say, oh, look, here are the black people over there.
Yeah.
Like, be happy, black people. You are in the story. You have... Finn gets to be happy because there are other black people that he's hanging out with.
You know? That's why he gets to be happy.
Right. And sometimes people just don't get how that is racist. It's a very racist thing. And that is why...
it's systemic. And that's where it's like... systemic. Sometimes when I talk about things like this to people, I look like the crazy person. And maybe you think I'm the crazy person, whoever's listening right now. Maybe you think I'm a crazy person.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I mean, it hurts my feelings a little bit, but it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I
so I related to Cash in that moment when he's just, like, covered in poop. And he's like, can I just show my video now?
Right.
Can I just show you? And he's going
from show to show. He's like, look, guys, call your governor. Call your this. And he's, like, on the campaign trail. And at the end, it kind of fizzes out. Their jobs back.
Even calling your governor and such, like, how many petitions have there been for Breonna Taylor?
So many.
Nothing's happened. Like, I think one person got fired.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Like,
so that's why, like, that's why sometimes it just, like, even when you do get people, like, when you rally them to action, like, it feels so discouraging.
Yeah, that is why it's so important to never stop. Like, to, like, you as a person, like, to actually, and to pace yourself, you know. I'm actually self-promotion moment, writing a song that talks about rest. And it talks about, like, sometimes you need to just decide, I want to be doing this for the long haul. Mm-hmm. So I just need to just prepare myself and rest whenever I can and get back to it. Because I think part of it is, like, there is the explosive moment when something happens, like George Floyd, and it explodes, right? And then people are waking up and people are stepping up and people are speaking out.
Yep.
And then it kind of fizzes out a bit. That explosion dies, which happens. And it should happen, because that's when real change starts to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea is you as a person decide and say, I'm going to actually find my space in this, find my own personal space, where I will be the most effective, mm-hmm. and I'm going to own it and run with it, rest whenever I can, make sure I pace myself so I don't get burned out and keep going. So and it allows you just to maintain your position, even though people will say you're crazy. I'm like, I don't think I'm being crazy. You know, I'm more for, like, I don't care. I don't really care what you think. The other thing, I'm like, if you don't see it, then you don't see it. Mm-hmm. And maybe one day you see it, but that really is the reality. There are a lot of writers who are saying that, and J.J. Abrams is just not in good books right now with a lot of people. He's working with
one of our favorite,
Jordan Peele, on Lovecraft
Country.
Lovecraft Country, and it's which is amazing. We watched the first episode.
It's on HBO. Comes out amazing on Sundays. It's very good.
Very good. Like, I was like, oh my God.
We're actually going to watch the first episode again.
Again.
Because there was so much that happened there that I can't.
Right. Black people that really run from monsters.
Oh my gosh.
None of this, like, tippy tap. You sprint.
You sprint. She's a track star. We don't want to ruin it for anyone who hasn't seen it.
Okay, anyway.
Shalom's going to get too excited. But J.J. Abrams is definitely trying to cleanse himself of the Star Wars fiasco.
Because he got questioned a lot.
By pairing himself with Jordan Peele, who is very, he's known for doing these, like, I don't think
telling
woke is still
black
a
stories.
I don't think woke horror is still a word. Is that still a thing?
No, like, he's very, like, he tells black stories.
Yes.
Wow. He's one of the best, like, I mean,
he's
him.
A great storyteller.
And he really found a way to make it in such a way that it goes across the board. Mm-hmm. Everyone will fall in love with it. And I love how he does that.
Did you have any other thoughts? Because I'm done.
You're wrapping up?
Yep.
No, I think I'm good. I could talk all day, but I'm going to stop myself.
We could talk for a long, like, I feel like we didn't even hit on every single thing within this movie, because it just has so many layers and so many things that are very, like, topical, very now. Like, I have a feeling that this, like, it feels like a showpiece for all of time, because I just feel like it's going to be themes that will kind of last forever in some ways.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And next week, well, what are we doing next week?
We're doing Luke Cage.
Luke.
We're talking.
Sweet Christmas.
Sweet Christmas. You actually kind of sound like Luke Cage a little bit. You guys have that same, voice tone?
Yeah, baritone
thing. You've had a long time to watch this on Netflix, guys.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've watched both season one and season two.
It's so good.
It's so good.
And I'll say it right now. It tells black stories really well.
Mm-hmm.
Black stories within a superhero context. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
So we'll be doing that next week. And then we will have our conclusion episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I had said originally that this was going to be a four-part series. The more we started talking about this, the more we were like, you know what? There needs to kind of be a final statement.
Mm.
This is basically like my five-paragraph essay. So we have my intro, and then we had our support paragraphs, which are our movies, and then we have our conclusion.
Right.
So that's basically what we're doing with our series now.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll also have a conclusion week where we kind of wrap up these ideas, as well as... I think that we really want to take an opportunity to also point out some other stories that we think are really good, and maybe some that aren't so good.
Mm-hmm.
Just for your own browsing and kind of entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
So also, don't forget, if you can, please take a chance to rate this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Please rate us. Please share us with your friends.
Yeah.
We just love nerding out about movies. Also, DM us. Like, oh my gosh, am always ready to talk about movies with, DM like, Courtney. Anyone. Oh, I mean, Shalom looks at them sometimes, but I usually respond. But we'll talk
the
about
the whole movies. Time you're responding to Courtney, not me.
And if I don't respond, it means that Shalom opened it and didn't tell me he opened it.
I'm pretty good nowadays. Facebook is not allowing me to completely remove the Happy Hipsters page, so it's frustrating.
So anyway, we are the_happy_hipsters on Instagram. Mm-hmm. We hang out there all the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, check us out.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey.
We'll see you next week. Mm-hmm.